Entropy is complicated, is the first thing to say about it. There are lots of different ways of thinking about it. There are mathematical ways of thinking about it. There are physical ways of thinking about it.
And we could think of, for example, with the students here who are milled about, milling about, they're filling out this space quite well. We could think about bringing those into what we term a low entropy state, where we pack them all nicely together, nicely ordered in the centre of this lovely grain. And then as they sort of spread out, move away from that nice order state, we see we're moving to a higher entropy state. And that's really what entropy is about. It's about this dispersal of energy, about this moving from a state where everything's nicely packed and nicely tightly ordered into one where everything spreads out. And you can apply that to gas molecules just as easy as you can apply it to students.
Hello, welcome to the Bikecast. Actually, it's going to be a walking cast for a while because I forgot, parked my bike a long way away yesterday and got a ride home. So now I've got to do the walk of shame back to the bike. It's really not that shameful, except that I'm wearing a sleeveless t-shirt, which makes sense if you're riding a bike or very muscular, but kind of looks silly. You're just walking around on campus and I'm talking to myself, which people don't have time to notice when I'm on a bike, but is somewhat more conspicuous when you're walking behind somebody or next to somebody. But don't worry, I'll edit out all the parts where I'm too embarrassed to talk. I'm very glad to have the extra time though, because I think I've wandered into something kind of interesting to do with the winding up of violence. It's a term I've used before, I think, in Bikecast, and it's sort of a vague notion I've had in my head. And it's you know, it's not anything that remarkable in the sense that it's very intuitive, but I thought of a couple good analogies and thinking about it, so I was going to run these by you guys. So what I've meant in the past when I talk about the winding up of violence is I mean that as you know, violence, more and more violence is piled upon a particular situation, talking about in the abstract, that the distance between the end of the violence and the return to normalcy increases. And I talked about it in terms of the drug war. So let's say the drug war begins in the 50s to some degree, certain things become illegal. And so the people who grew, let's say, marijuana or whatever, that wanted to remain law-abiding citizens, they just stopped. And if 5 years later, if in 1955, say, and these dates are all just kind of made up, the drug war had ended, it wouldn't really be that big of a deal. Nothing would have changed that drastically. Some black marketeers would have the upper hand, would have a slight head start because they've already got distribution networks in place and all that sort of thing. Whereas people who have left the business would be, you know, if they wanted to re-enter it, would be a little bit behind. But the overall context of the drug war, not that much violence had been put into the situation or been applied to the situation, so there's no real noticeable after effects. But then you get into the 60s and 70s and interdiction increases and the penalties increase and the danger increases. You introduce SWAT teams and there's an increasing chance that if you're involved in this trade that you'll be killed or put in prison for a long time. And so the people involved in the trade become increasingly violent, increasingly criminal, simply because when the stakes get that high, everyone else who's not unstable, who's not well-suited to a life of crime and violence will go elsewhere, will do something else. It's not worth it unless you've really got nothing else that you can do. And so now, even if we legalize drugs, there are well-armed gangs of people who have gained controls of small geographic regions. I guess the FARC had already started in Colombia. There are small street gangs in the urban core of some major cities. And eventually, these guys will dissipate because without the money they're making from the drug trade, they're not sustainable in the long run. But it takes time for that to happen, and during that time, they're able to disrupt society and increase human misery in a number of ways. We'll jump to the present day after 20, 30 more years of escalated violence. Now, the only people that are left in control or the only people involved with the drug trade are multinational, thoroughly psychotic criminal gangs who have consolidated power over large geographic regions and are now virtually states in themselves. And I think it's questionable, even if the war on drugs was to end today, I think it's questionable that these mini states on the border of Mexico, as an example, would ever go away, or would go away in the foreseeable future, would go away before the remaining Mexican federal government went away. So I want to lay out a somewhat dorky, maybe useful, maybe not so useful analogy. And I want to analogize the capacitance for violence to the capacitance for information as described by the second law of thermodynamics. So the second law of thermodynamics says that in a closed system, information will gradually decay and entropy will gradually increase. Well, I hope it's the second law of thermodynamics. And this is a pop science rendition of whichever law of thermodynamics I'm trying to talk about here in this analogy. Creationists use this to attempt to establish the existence of God. If everything is heading towards entropy, then this is a contradiction of claims, evolutionary claims, that we are the result of a long process of increasing complexity. Complexity being increased information, more structure. How is it that, given that the natural state of things is to become less structured, less complex, more entropic, how is it that evolution can be part of the natural world when evolution requires or claims that things become more complex, more information rich, and less entropic? Well, what the creationist slash theist is missing in the logic is the sun. The Earth is not a closed system. It is constantly bombarded with energy. There is a steady stream of massive energy that provides the fuel for complexity to develop, for complex, increasingly complex biological structures to develop. And the minute the sun winks out, that stream of energy is lost. Now, what's on Earth will continue to maintain its complexity for, well, that's not true. The minute that that happens, or shortly thereafter, life on Earth will begin to lose complexity without the energy that drives evolution and sustains life. Life on Earth will become less complex in the form of things dying and decaying into simpler inorganic materials. And after some amount of time, there will be no remnant of the complexity, no remnant of the information that had been built or fueled or energized by the sun. Well, as of that stoplight, I just thought of a simpler example. I'm going to use it because I think it's, well, simpler, and it's another example, hence the simpler example label. If I have a pot of water and I let it just sit in a dark room, it will end up all the same temperature. That is to say, there will be no complexity in the structure of the water. All of it will be identical. It will be entirely evened out. Now, if I put that water on a stove, I start to inject energy into the system and I start to introduce complexity into the structure of the water. Now, there are areas where the water is slightly warmer. There are currents that are moving. Things are becoming more complicated. And if I leave the heat on, then this structure, the complexity will increase up to where I have a pot of boiling water with some of the water changing state into steam and escaping upwards and so forth. A very complex, information-rich pot of water. Now, once I turn the heat off, though, the water trends back towards entropy, sameness, evenness, a lack of information, a lack of complexity, just a pot of cool water sitting there very still. So now the bridge to the winding up of violence, drug war example. Violence is extremely expensive. It's not productive. It doesn't build anything new. It costs energy. This is why cooperation and social organization is core to our biological existence. A society that is truly, or an imagined species, that is truly bloodthirsty and violence prone will expend far more energy trying to meet their needs than one in which needs can be met in peaceful, cooperative, social environments. And this is why, in a closed system, violence peters out. Two boxers fighting each other can't go very long before they have to stop. It's very expensive to fight. Two countries without allies fighting each other will wear down the economies, the population. Eventually, they will not be able to continue the conflict. And so the natural state of things is peaceful. And we call this normalcy. Well, we don't call it normalcy, I guess. Let's call it normalcy. So let's take this society in its stable state, peaceful state. What happens if violence is added? What happens if someone comes, just to keep the analogy as close as possible, let's just say someone comes from, quote, outside the system. So someone comes and kills somebody and have added violence to the system. Well, what happens now? Now, what was previously peaceful has now got some small amount of energy. There's a small demand for retribution. There's anger. There's a desire for violence in return. Now, if nothing further happens, this goes away over time. or maybe somebody is caught and brought to justice and it's settled, or whatever. But things tend to go back to normal. Now, if there was a lot of pent-up violence, if there was a lot of stored energy, if, you know, for whatever reason, sort of a, to jump way to another analogy or way to another scenario, a World War I scenario where a single assassination of a particular imperial heir can unleash the kind of violence that the First World War did, well, that's not because the society was in a stable state and a single violent act caused it to switch states, a stable, peaceful state. It's because there was massive amounts of stored up violence that were put in motion by a single act. But anyway, I think I've made my bridge from thermodynamics to the social setting. Whether or not that was necessary, I don't know. But anyway, it was on my mind, and now it is irrevocably in your ear. But this is a pattern, an inevitable pattern. And I've said many's the time, I think, that violence cannot solve problems. And we all know from every philosophical tradition under the sun that violence begets violence, and those who live by the sword die by the sword. And it all speaks to the same thing, which is that violence does not move society to a peaceful state. The addition of violence to a situation can only add human misery to the situation. And nowhere is this phenomenon in its more crystalline state than in the case of war. And we can see numerous instances where a local conflict of a very limited and primitive nature has energy added to it, has violence added to it by an empire from the outside. I think Vietnam is a fantastic example of this, where during the German occupation of France, a relatively small, primitive, relatively nonviolent, not philosophically necessarily, but in physical reality, group of nationalists wanted an independent nation state or some kind of independent entity free from French colonial rule. And if they had at that point been given what they asked, that country would likely have flourished just fine. Or at the very worst, there would have been some primitive internal conflict that would exhaust itself very briefly and very shortly, and then settle in on a very peaceful, stable state. But instead, when the war ended, the French returned and began to attempt to suppress this movement. So just like as an analogy, or just like with the war on drugs story, the more mild, peaceful, centrist political types were jailed or shot or expelled from the country. And the only people left, or increasingly throughout time, the people that remained were militant, violent, the kinds of people who can survive and continue to push against the French Empire. After several years, when the French were finally pushed out, if the violence had ended at that point, if the energy from outside the system had ceased at that point, there probably would have been more violence. It probably would have been a more contentious post-colonial conflict within the country, assuming no outside intervention, which is a laughable assumption, but let's go with it. But instead, the United States got involved and ramped up the violent energy being poured into the situation beyond belief. And so how did it end? Well, it ended in bloody purges and recriminations and prison systems and a brutal regime that took years to play itself out, to lose its energy and to return to a stable state, a stable society. And of course, that's what's happening again in Afghanistan and in Iraq. Reasonable, peaceful people, business people, professional people are being marginalized and executed and pushed out of the system. And the only remaining players are the most vicious and brutal wielders of violence. And the longer the United States provides weapons and money and munitions and support to these various factions, the longer it will take post-departure, post-withdrawal, for anything resembling a stable society to return. If the Soviets had not invaded Afghanistan after being provoked into an invasion by Jimmy Carter, there may have been a conflict inside the country, but the biggest weapon wielded would have been an automatic rifle. If this current occupation were to end today, whatever resulting internal conflicts occur will have all means of ability to deal out death on scales the region's people hadn't even seen 50 years ago. And so even beyond what should be extremely compelling moral reasons, there are practical reasons to leap to the answer of a withdrawal of energies from a conflict as the very best possible course of action. We should always be able to predict the outcome when the means chosen are to escalate violence within a system, no matter how theoretically well-intentioned the logic behind the escalation is. Anyway, thank you for bearing with me through my perhaps tedious analogy. I feel much better now that it has exploded out of my brain and is now in some kind of media format. If you have any questions or comments, I would love to hear them. Stop by jaddavis.com, jad-davis.com, and leave them there, or go to the contact information and send me an email. Thanks for listening. Until next time, take care.